Rav in Canada, in a fairly small place. People were moving in there, and because there was a conservative shul, which was beautiful and magnificent, and it was also a more traditional kind of shul, and they were both magnificent shuls, very large, beautiful shul. And all the young couples that moved into the area, they didn't daven by him. He was the Rav of the Frum shul, but his shul was neglected and old and broken. It didn't look like anything fancy at all. So people, by nature, they tend to go to the shuls that look more presentable, naturally so. So he ended up, and he knew that if he wants his shul to succeed, if he wants his community to have future, he's got to invest into the shul. But the problem was that there was absolutely no funding, and there was no money for it whatsoever, and there was no choice but to go to a bank to ask for a mortgage. Now the figure that, he said, that's the only thing that stuck to my mind, because I thought that, I laughed, because nowadays you wouldn't get, it was $150,000. That's what that he needed, $150,000. I don't know if this was in the 70s or in the 80s, I'm not sure. He needed $150,000 to remake and make the shul into a beautiful, magnificent shul. And he knew that he's going to have $150,000. So he went to the bank, and he said, like, a mortgage for $150,000. And that $150,000 you won't get, you can't remake old. No, it must be. My guess is, I don't know.
50s or 60s, I think.
Yes. Could be, yeah. All right, okay. So he went to the bank, and here he goes to that, it's not a manager, who deals with mortgage? Yeah, well, a mortgage, yeah. So he says, tell me what you need the money for. Obviously, the first question, he says, well, I've got a synagogue, and he didn't want him to know that it's a form shul, because he thought that the guy is more likely to give if it's a more kind of... We always think that it's a mistake that we all make, because I don't think that, as far as goyim is concerned, I don't think they care between form and not so form. I don't think they really care, but that's a mistake that we tend to make, no? I don't think for goy, I don't know, I don't think it makes so much of a difference. I don't know. Anyway, so he said that, well, it's for shul, we've got services. And he said, well, what kind of party? He's a goy. This bank manager was a goy. He said, what kind of Jewish, what kind of stream do you belong to? And he wants to avoid the question. He says, well, you know, we're all the same. He didn't want to say that he's a Fum Yid. He said, no, tell me, please. I know there's various types. You those really ultra-Orthodox ones. And then he said, well, he couldn't say no. So he said, yeah. So you want to build an ultra-Orthodox synagogue? And he says, yeah, we'd like to. And I said, are you the rabbi? He says, yes, I am. So, well, if that's the case, I'll give you $150,000. And in fact, some of it's going to be in my own pocket. And he said, well, what's the story? So I tell you, the story goes like this. He said that when he was a child, he said he was brought up in a tiny village. Now, I don't know Canada, I don't know where it was, but some sort of tiny little place. It's a village of only a certain amount of... And it was within that place, there was only a few families. There was only one shop. And the shop was owned by a Yid. And he was a Fum Yid, and he had the shop that would sell clothes and many clothes and other. There was only one shop, and he said that this guy says that when he was a child, his father died, and when he died, they were very, very poor. They were really poor. A few days after his father died, the Yid, who was the owner of the shop, the local shop, who happens to be a Fum Yid, went up to the mother. Oh, this was now a widow, and he said, listen, I know that your husband died, he must be going through tough times, and I know that I've got a shop of clothing and I'm well to do, you know, I imagine it must be very tough for you at the moment, so by all means come into the shop whenever you need clothes, just come and take for your kids what you need, and if you need something for yourself, by all means please come, if you can pay, if you can't pay, it's also fine. If you want to pay later, that's also fine. If you don't want to pay, that's also fine. I know it must be tough for you, so for the moment, just feel free to come and take. She was ever so grateful, and he was able to, he remembered that, and he said that eventually things became easy because his mother remarried and whatever, and things. But he always remembered that Orthodox Jew was so kind and helpful. It was a picture that stuck in his mind. I don't know how many times they went to the shop and took things from there, but in his mind it was this Orthodox Jew, and he said he never had the opportunity for paying back because he was a goy and he had never opportunity, and he lived in a place where there wasn't so many particularly. He said, when I saw you walking into the bank I was hoping you'd end up on my till, in my office. I was hoping, because I suddenly remembered that I owe you one. I owe you, Orthodox Jews, I owe you one. And I was hoping you'd come in here. Yeah. So here, the $150,000 for the rebuilding of the shul had enabled that to happen, which on natural circumstances wouldn't have happened. Now, of course, there is an element to that story, which is the Ashkocha Potis element, but that, okay, that's one thing. But I think what's more striking, what in my eyes, what the story teaches us, is that we often don't realize, we don't remember how far our actions go and how eternal our actions are. Sometimes we do something, and then 5 minutes later we forgot about it, which is fine, it's okay. We're allowed to forget especially our good things, we're allowed to forget, but we don't realize how eternal our actions are. They go on and on. Who would have thought that this yid over there, that 40, 50 years earlier, had doing something good. Who thought that when he was kind to this widow, how would have thought that 40, 50 years later, that would enable a shul elsewhere to be built, on a more full shul to be built later? It's that unimaginable. And I think that's what the story is teaching us about the eternity of our actions. Okay, so that's it. It's unbelievable. Okay, Simon Tov Nun Gimel Sivtal. Now, how this connects to Shmura Matzis, I don't know. I don't know if it connects to Shmura Matzis, but it's. So we learned yesterday, Simon Tov Nun Gimel Siv Dalet. I would like to briefly go through, because we only went through Shulchan Aruch. There is a couple of Mishnah Berurahs, and most importantly, this is a crucial and very, very important fundamental halachas of Pesach. So I want to go through Siv Dalet again, and we'll move on afterwards to the next Siv Bezer Hashem, which also has got additional important concepts. So Siv Dalet, let's go through Kikuit. Achitim Shoyzim by Matzah's Mitzvah, the chitim, the wheat that used for Matzah's Mitzvah. Toivet is good to guard them that no water should come out from Shas Ketzira. For the Fochos, and at very least, Mishas Techino, from the grinding, Mishas Techak, if nothing else is possible, Mutalikach Kevach, and Ashuki can take from the markets. As we explained yesterday, the starting point of this halacha is the possible in the Torah which says, Hushmartem as Hamatzois. You should guard the Matzois. And we learned that every Matz, everything you eat on Pesach must be chometz free. Obviously, because eating chametz on Pesach, obviously, is in its own right. So obviously, it must be chametz free anyway. But besides that, in addition, there's an additional mitzvah. Ushmatem es hamatzis, you should guard the matzahs. Obviously, this must be an additional halacha. What is that referring to? You have to guard the matzahs. Guard from what? Guarding from becoming chametz. What does it mean to guard? So the first opinion holds that from the time that you're harvesting it, that you have, from that moment, you have to make an extra protection, extra layer of safeguarding, that it shall not become chametz. An additional, more lenient opinion holds that, forget about harvesting, don't worry about that, you only later, when you're grinding the wheat and you're making it into flour, at that point you should make really, really sure that it's not going to become chametz. There is an even more lenient opinion that holds that, forget about ktsira, you don't have to be particularly concerned from harvesting, you don't even have to be particularly concerned from your grinding, but even matzahs, which are made from flour, which you're taking from a shop, random flour, that's good enough as well.
And it applies to the first two nights, doesn't it?
It does indeed, absolutely.
Why?
It does, and that's where the term Shmura Matzahs come from. Shmura. Now, Shmura Matzahs is a very inaccurate term. It's very inaccurate. And really, it should say, really should say, Shmura Meshas Ketzira. And I think some of the Ashkochas are makbit right there. They do say that. Yeah, because the term Shmura Matzahs is irrelevant. Shmura from what? You're not telling me anything. So what we want on the Storim night, we want Shmura Meshas Ketzira. We want it to be guarded from harvesting, which is the most stringent opinion. I want to say that it is really important that we keep an eye on this. I've experienced myself a couple of years ago. I went to a shop. I bought my Shmura Matzahs, and there were normal shop, and they were put in the boxes of the matzahs were placed in the wrong place. As simple as that. So I mean that the matzahs which were Mishas Techino were with the matzahs that were Mishas Techino, the boxes were identified, but the places where they were and the labels underneath it were simply in the wrong place, because can't have any tinyness on there, because obviously it's the the culturally what who I haven't attended the Yeshua for so long, so they have put the place in the wrong place. How should they know the difference between red and green and whatever? They're not so therefore, so it's very important, as you're pointing out, yes, we need to have Shmura, and Shmura needs to be on the first two nights, and it's Mishas Ketzira. However, if B'tyevad, a person eats, it's happened in the past, that people ate the wrong matzahs on Seder nights, happens. So if a person eats B'tyevad, Shmura Mishas Techino, B'tyevad will be Yotze, but that's a very, very weak level of fulfillment of the mitzvah.
The Shmura Mishas Techino, just for Pesach.
Yes.
Yes,
absolutely, yeah.
So,
yeah. But there is something about the... Now, I wanted to also point out, we mentioned yesterday about the harvesting time of the harvesting time of the chitim, of the wheat, when it comes to the Shas Ketzira. Now, I don't know for a fact. What I'm saying now is some of which I heard from an unreliable source. So please, I'm just saying it to check, okay? Because I don't know if it's true. Have you noticed that those of us who eat hand matzahs, have you noticed that Mishas Ketzira, Mishas Techino, they look and they taste a bit different? Machine matzahs. They look and they taste different. They do. So the question is why? Right?
Machine.
I'm referring now specifically to machine matzahs. So if you have machine matzahs, you'll see that they look a bit different. Now, I don't know for a fact. Mm-hmm. Now, I find you have to block your ears because machine matzahs on Pesach, you have to block your ears. I heard once, and again, it's from an unreliable source. It has to do with the harvesting because the harvest different. We mentioned yesterday that when you harvest for you have to shmura from Shas Ketzira, so it's a different batch, and they are looked after and protected differently, a bit more intense, right? That's what it is. That's Shas Ketzira. So they're separate, they're different, and because there's more hand involvement and more direct involvement and more, so they will look a little bit different. They will look a little bit different because there's more. It's just done a bit differently, and they are cut a bit earlier, and they are dealt with a bit differently. So therefore, it has to do with that. Okay, let's see the Mishnah Berurah of here. Sif Kotn Chavalev. Shoyzlim by Matzah Mitzvah. Roitze Loima. Matzah Shoyzlim B'Shtem Aleilos Arishonis. That's what you pointed out. We are referring to now to the matzahs which are eaten on the first two nights of Pesach. Lekayim Bohem, to fulfill with those matzahs mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Bo'erev Toichlo Matzahs, the mitzvah of you should eat on those nights matzahs. Heim, those matzahs tzrichim require shmir yaseh additional safeguarding. Veloy dai lonu, and it's not sufficient for us, she'ein lonu reeseh she'esh chashas chom chimutz. It's not good enough just to know there's no chomutz. That's not good enough. That's okay when it comes to your average food on Pesach. As long as you know it's not chomutz, gizont ha'et, eat it, right? If you want to eat, if you want to eat, anything, your foods that you eat throughout Pesach, and your drinks that you drink throughout Pesach, as long as you know it's not chametz, you can enjoy it. Not so when it comes to the matzahs, shel mitzvah, those you have to positively ensure there's a process of safeguarding. Shetzach shimo yeseiro l'shem matzahs, mitzvah, shem mitzvah's matzah. Tachsivu shmartem es ha-matzos. V'haynu, shetzichim sh'ish ma'ele shem matzah, they have to be safeguarded with that particular intention that the mitzvah will be fulfilled. B'shaz katsir yosef kot chov beis, the most stringent opinion. Yoyitze loyma, sh'ish ma'ele, should be safeguarded me'eis ha'iv ve'olah from that point onward. Not just at the point of harvesting, but rather from the harvesting till the packaging. That no water should come in touch with it. L'shem matzahs mitzvah. Avol koidem ketzira, but before ketzira, before harvesting, shadanim chuborin, as we mentioned yesterday, as long as it's still connected, ein lochos, you don't have to worry. Obviously, as long as the wheat is still growing, there is no concern, because it's unlikely to grow without water. So as long as the wheat is still growing, it's not going to become chametz. Even if it's raining, it doesn't matter, because it's still connected. But now he brings a chumrah, and I'm sure that Chofetz Chaim would have added brackets here if this would have been common in his days. There is one exception, and that is the following: even if it's still connected in his yap shule gamer, if it's completely dry, and it doesn't require anymore to nutritious connection to the ground, mekabel chemutz, it can become chometz im yodin im kshom if rain falls on it. Valkein, therefore, hamineg, the custom is, and that's true this day. To this day, likzo dogon shal shmura ba'odon lochim ktsas, we harvest the wheat for the matzahs very early in the year. I believe some of them are cut as we are talking now, this time of year it's been cut. It's cut much earlier than other. The harvesting is not letable here. We just want to make sure that it's not dry yet, because in case it's dry and fully grown, we'd be worried that perhaps if it's rained now, it would become chometz, although it's still connected. But generally, the rule is, as long as it's still connected, it won't become chometz. But we want to be a bit machmir. Meshas techino, the second opinion is techino. So from harvesting on, you don't have to worry. It's only from the techino, from the grinding, which is taking place later. From that point, you have to worry. Lefish oz mekarvino yiston el amayim, because that's when it gets close to the water on a logistical level. When it's being ground, it's physically much closer to the water. So here you've got to make sure that it's not getting in touch with water yet. V'tzorich shmir, and it requires safeguarding. Now the last is sefkon chovdalet, which holds the last opinion holds that yeah, no, don't worry about it. You can take any random flour from the market. This opinion holds that it's from the kneading on and not before that. Before that, there's no requirement for shmira. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, I'm going to point that out here again. This is untrue nowadays. Nowadays, you can certainly not take flour from the shuk, from the market, from Tesco. You cannot take flour because it's inevitably bleached, and it's probably chometz gomel. It's probably chometz gomel. So bags of flour have been in touch with water already, either steam or proper water has been bleached, and therefore it's probably chometz gomel. The question is much more about if one is allowed to sell flour to the goy, over those of us who are makbi, not to sell chometz gomel. If you can sell bags of flour, that's a good question. That's a good shaila.
I always understood shmura to mean that it's going to have das.
Yes,
so
correct.
So I've never spoken about that.
So the das is, so what does das mean? Das. Yeah.
So we haven't spoken about that.
Yes, so that is true as well. That is true as well. There is that element as well. But yeah, so that intention, that das that you have, that positive intention, the way that is displayed during the baking is the way what you're saying when you're baking them out. But there's also that positive shmir element, that das element. Before that is by safeguarding. So you're right as well. That is also true, that you've got to have das when you bake it. The shem matzah's mitzvah. But before that, there's also an element, and I did. You've got to really, really do shmir on it. You have to safeguard it. I want to point out. There is also, the Mishnah Berurah says, shmira from, he says that shmira shasira means from ketzira. Shmira mashas means from techina. Shmira mashas, lisha means from lisha. Until when? Until it goes in your mouth. Good. So you're right. The reason why I'm pointing this out, so the pashtus, you're right, that it cannot become chometz anymore after it's been baked. And I want to just share with you an interesting Chaim Brisker. It's called a chumrah, and I just like it because it gives us a bit of an insight of. I think it's just interesting. In the brisk, there's a chumrah. You know, we all steal. Well, we take the afikomen. Yeah, the children take the afikomen. There's a good reason for that. Whatever the minig is, the minig. In brisk, they don't take the afikomen. In the brisk rav and the chaim brisker, they were makbe not to take the afikomen. And I don't know the background of it exactly, but the little I know is because, yeah, there's a chinuch element as well, perhaps. There's some were makbe on the chinuch aspect, what kind of teaching, but I think that kids know very well that it's not really stealing, but it is, yeah, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was makbe, don't introduce stealing to the kids. Yeah, there's that as well. But apparently in brisk, they don't take the matzahs because of, they felt the miss that it's lacking in shmira, because who says the pasuk is what you are saying. Who says the shmirah finishes when it's baked? Perhaps after it's baked, you still have got to make sure that it doesn't get in touch with chametz. Not that it doesn't become chametz, that it doesn't get in touch with chametz. Consequently, the shmirah, the safeguarding, requires that you look after it until you actually eat it. As you said, until you actually eat it. And therefore, if the matzah, the pekoyman, is being taken, and the kid takes it and he puts it, who knows where he puts it? It's lacking in shmirah. It's lacking in shmirah. And that's why, in Bisk, apparently, you have to check by the experts, but I think in Bisk, that's why they were makbid, not to take the matzah, the koyman, because it's lacking in shmirah. So, because if a kid takes it, then it's a bit out of your control. It's not shomu anymore, yeah. Pardon? Holy Yom Tov, yeah. That's it, yeah. And then it wouldn't, yeah. Yeah. I find this chumrah, it's an amazing chumrah. So how would they eat on Shabbos Chol HaMoed, and how would they it's a chumrah. Yeah. Yeah, what are you saying? Our matzahs nowadays they'll be, I think that most of them will be. I think most of them will be Shas Tchina. I think. Do you mean the machine matzahs?
Yeah. Say Shas Tchina.
Yeah, I will say Tchina. They are from Tchina. Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't be Lisha. I don't think there's any.
So those matzahs, b'dyavad, are okay.
Yes, absolutely. It means if b'dyavad, every year there's that child. If somebody b'dyavad eats the will eat matzahs that are sold mishas, the ones the machine matzahs, the cheaper machine matzahs mishas, if it's from a good hashkocha and it's takim mishas tchino, then but yeah, it's a very weak level of fulfillment. But yes, the answer is yes.
What about from Lisha? That's not even
b'dyavad. Well, we're saying that mishas adchak, so mishas adchak. I don't know. Yeah, where did that chumah come from? I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. You're right. Is that chumah? To chumah to eat shmurah. I don't know where that comes from. Where does that chumah come from to eat shmurah the whole year, the whole Yom Tov? I don't know where that comes from. I've forgotten. But you know,
how do we know that the pasuk is referring to?
It's about the mitzvah. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
So I don't know where that comes from. It's a good question. A good question. That's lemaisa. What we are. That's what it says over here. Yeah. Okay, let's just start perhaps a little bit. See if hey, ha'ina also little toys ben chitim ben tzor. Top of page 96. Letzisa is something which we're not familiar with because we don't do it. And what it is, it's soaking. Now again, what becomes chometz? What's the definition of chometz?
Chomish
of what? What's the state of the chomish mini dogon? What is it?
Well, I mean, even once it's tolished, but nothing's been done to it.
Yeah. So, if you take a kernel, and you add water to it, will it become chometz? Or?
Well, we spoke about that with the Tarnagolim.
Yes. Yeah, so the point being as follows. Normally, when we talk about something becoming chometz, it's about flour. When it once been ground, flour together with water, that will become chametz. What about the gehazmin if it's just wheat? So there is something called lesisa. Lesisa, which you take either grains of wheat or of barley, you soak it, and subsequently you grind it. That really isn't chametz. And there was a way of doing lesisa, which means soaking of wheat or barley. If you soak it and then you grind it straight away, in the olden days, this was permitted to do. Shulchan Aruch teaches us, because it's not really chametz, Shulchan Aruch teaches us, don't do that. Don't do lesisa. Because it's nowadays, we don't mess with that. Don't mess with it. And if you've got wheat, you've got barley, don't put water with it and afterwards grind it, and afterwards it's not worth it. So therefore we're not bucking it, we don't do that. But in the nowadays, also Lil says we don't soak. Whether it is wheat or barley, we avoid that. Although as the Mishnah Berurah says in Sifkot Chavav, although in previous generations loy osu, it was a way of doing it, and without it becoming chametz, nowadays we refrain from that. To summarize what we learned this evening, we learned that there's three levels, three opinions, how you fulfill the mitzvah of shmartem as a matzois. The most stringent opinion holds that you fulfill the mitzvah of shmartem as a matzois by safeguarding it from ketzira, harvesting. Slightly more lenient opinion holds from grinding tchina, and the most lenient opinion, lisha, from kneading. That's the most lenient opinion. Lemais, of course, we're machmir. Again, this is different than any other food we eat over Pesach. They just ensure that it's not chametz taken. That's fine. Over here, there's an additional element of shmartem, you have to safeguard. And then finally, we learn that touches the concept of lesisa. Lesisa means soaking. In previous generations, it was permitted to soak wheat and barley, subsequently grind it, you make flour from it, and then it was okay to do that. Nowadays, we don't soak anymore. It's not recommended. It's not good practice. And that's what we cover this evening. Tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, I think the consensus was not to have a shir in honor of our folks, which is taking place tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the Besmedesh. So I think if that's the, is that the general understanding? Yeah, well, the Olim intended to attend, I suppose, right? So therefore, there will not be a shir tomorrow, but Sunday, back to normal, Be'ez Hashem. So I wish you a very good evening.